Good evening, one and all. It's good to see you here this evening. Been quite the rainy day today, but I just get the strange feeling the next week or so we're going to be longing for days like this. We might as well take advantage of these cool, wet days. They're not going to be around for much longer. And I'm glad that we didn't allow these things to keep us from worshiping, assembling together and worshiping God in spirit and truth and learning from His Word. We're going to continue our worship service this moment, breaking open the Word of Life. I encourage you to grab a Bible. If you didn't bring one with you, there should be one right in front of you. Grab hold of that thing. Open it up. We're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 27 this evening. We read the same passage this morning. Rhonda led the same song this morning before the lesson. Great introduction for what we're going to talk about. We talked about this morning about solid rock living. And we looked at four steps in solid rock living, and tonight we're going to look at four more. We're going to elaborate on those things. Jesus had these things to say, Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 27. This is how He wrapped up that most awesome sermon, the most incredible sermon ever to be preached, that ever will be preached, what we call the Sermon on the Mount. This is how He finished that. What a punch He packed in this sermon, but He finished it even stronger than He began it. And what an awesome finish to an incredible sermon. Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 24. "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and slammed against that house and it fell and great was its fall." We talked about some things this morning that Jesus had to say in this Sermon on the Mount. But specifically how He wrapped things up, Jesus was teaching spiritual realities here from physical facts and the laws and the principles of physics. You want to build a house that's going to withstand the storms, the wind, the rain, then you're going to have to build that house firmly on the rock. You have to have a firm foundation underneath it. In this particular place, in this culture, in this climate, sudden violent storms brought torrential rains and strong winds. And flash floods came. That's what Jesus is talking about when the winds came and the rains and the floods. He's talking about flash flooding. It was common in this part of the world. And if you're thinking about building a house in this climate, in this place, you better be thinking about a firm foundation. You better be willing to dig down deep into that sand, below that sand, through the sediment and into the bedrock below. And that's really what Jesus is talking about here in a parallel passage. Luke chapter 6, verse 47, He said, "This wise man is like a man building his house who dug deep and laid a foundation on the rock. And when the rains come, the winds whip around, and the creek rises, you're going to be all right. Your house is going to stay put because you're built on that firm foundation." We do the same thing in our country, in our culture as well, don't we? We build things. We build a house that's going to be on a firm foundation. What happens? One of the first things you do is you dig a trench around the place where you're going to put your house and you pour concrete in that. We call that a footer. Or you frame up the concrete forms, and you pour a concrete slab or concrete blocks or something. You're building on the rock. One way or another, that's the way we do that as well. And Jesus is telling us here that He is the rock. He is the firm foundation. He is what we should be building our lives upon. 2 Samuel chapter 22, verses 32 and 33 says, "For who is God besides the Lord? And who is a rock besides our God? God is my strong fortress, and He sets the blameless in His way." Who is the rock that we're talking about? Well, I don't think He's directly alluding to that, but don't you think He's trying to plant that seed in these people's mind? You built your real house on the rock because that's firm. Who are you going to build your life on? God, the rock. And He's talking about Himself here too. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 11 says, "For no man can lay a foundation other than the one which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." He is the rock. He is the firm foundation. He is the one that we're going to be building our life on if we want to be safe and strong and secure. And all that sounds great, doesn't it? It sounds wonderful. It's such great preacher speak there, right? How do you do it? How do you go about doing those kinds of things? Well, Jesus tells us. He doesn't leave any mystery here for us. He says the person who listens to His words and acts upon them, he does them, he obeys them, those commands He gives, this is the wise person. This is the one who's building his house on the rock. He's building his life upon the rock, upon Jesus. Now the fool, he hears as well, but he doesn't act. Now you think about this. Everyone is a builder. Everyone sitting here this evening is a builder. Whether you know it or not, you're a builder. No one's excluded here. The thing is, it's up to you whether you're going to be a wise builder or a foolish builder. No one's excluded from building. And you need to be building your house on the rock, Jesus says. You need to be building your house the right way because you're building right this very moment, whether you know it or not. That building is your life. You're either wise or you're a fool. Now listen, now that's not my words. Jesus is telling you that. The Lord gives you no middle ground here to work with, no wiggle room. You can't build partly on the sand, partly on the rock. You can't build two houses, one on the sand, one on the rock. The sand can't be your summer home. You want to cut loose and lay back and do your own thing. That's not how it works here. Some try to do that. Some people try to live a double life. It doesn't work. It doesn't wash with the Lord. You're on the sand firmly when that's the case, or not so firmly. If you're not building your life on Jesus all the way, if you're hearing His words and not acting on them, then you're a fool. Well, what words are we supposed to be listening to and acting upon? Well, obviously everything that Jesus says in the Bible, this is all His Word. Whether inspired men spoke it, or whether the red letters in the Gospels, it's all His. But specifically, it's this sermon that He just delivered to these people. How He wrapped it up. This thing we call the Sermon on the Mount. He talked about some very important things. We talked about some of these things, some of these bedrock lessons, some of these solid, firm, foundational lessons that Jesus teaches us right here in Matthew chapter 5 through Matthew chapter 7. We talked about some things this one. We talked about step one, about letting your light shine before men so they see your good works, so they'll be drawn to the Father. It's in Matthew chapter 5. And also, not to have lust in your heart, because it's a very dangerous thing to do. It can draw your heart away from the Lord. Let your eyes get yourself in trouble. And step three, be a person of your word. Let your yeses be yes and your noes be no. You don't have to vow. You don't have to swear on a stack of Bibles if you're just a truthful person. And step four, we talked about doing good to those, even the ones who do bad to you, even those who are doing evil to you, loving your enemies. You do good to all people. That's solid rock living. And tonight we're going to talk about some more things from chapter 6 and chapter 7. We're going to talk about doing good, not just doing good to be seen by men. Verse 1 of chapter 6. And forgiving those who trespass against you in verse 14. And not storing your treasure up on this earth in verse 19. And not love money in verse 25. And not worry in verse 24. And in chapter 7 and verse 1, don't judge other people hypocritically. In verse 12, the golden rule, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And then verse 13, enter in at the narrow gate. Now we're going to consolidate this into four steps. We're not going to hit every point at length because we want to get out of here tonight. But anyway, step five in solid rock living is don't store your treasures on this earth. And I said it again, I said it wrong again. I said don't store your treasures in heaven. And I said that this morning as well. You do want to store your treasures in heaven. Don't store your treasures on earth. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. Matthew 6, verses 19 through 21 says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasure in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart's going to be also. You think about the things you love the most. So what are the things that you treasure the most in your heart? Because whatever these things are, wherever those things are, that's where your heart's going to be as well. Jesus says your heart's going to be affixed to those things. Now, if you're the things you value the very most in your life are the things that you find right here on this earth. Well, you think about it. That's foolishness, because that's where your heart's going to be. Your heart's going to be affixed right here to this earth and not up there in heaven where it's supposed to be. And you're in for some major disappointments if that's the case. It's just how it is. Because you're not going to be here for very long. Why put all of your heart into things that are just passing away and in a place you're not going to be very long at? And this word, when Jesus says thieves break in and steal, this word for break in literally means to dig through. Now, in Jesus' day, thieves could actually dig through the walls of a house because of the way they were constructed with mud or whatever those materials were. They weren't that solid. You think about in Mark chapter 2 and verse 5, when all the people were coming to Jesus at the home that he was staying in Capernaum, and these guys tried to bring this paralytic to him to heal him, but he couldn't get through. So they took him up on the roof, and it says they removed the roof and they dug through to get into him. So you see, the houses weren't that solidly constructed. Another reason why you need to firmly fix your house on the rock, I would imagine. But anyway, that's the kind of thing they dealt with back then. It was just difficult to secure your earthly valuables. And one of the methods, common methods that people used, was to dig a hole in the ground and put their treasures there. But even that didn't really protect them. They were still exposed to being stolen or to decay or corruption. And you think about us today. We're more sophisticated, right? We're a more sophisticated society. We got a lot of fine technology to work with. And we just go to great lengths to protect our earthly treasures, don't we? We've got security systems with alarms. We got safes. We've got safety deposit boxes. We've got all kinds of places we can store our treasure and kind of feel good about that. There's some really elaborate security systems out there, if you've noticed that, to protect our earthly treasure. You think about your home. Nobody's going to be able to dig into your home. It's pretty solid and sound structure, I'm sure. But people get in there anyway. So what do? They put security systems in there with burglar alarms and watchdogs and security doors, and they just got all kinds of things in place to deter thieves from coming in there. And they still get in there. To some thieves, that's just a challenge. Well, I want to get in there that much more. I don't know if you may have saw this video on YouTube of this woman in Florida a couple years back, about these criminals, these burglars who broke into her house. And she had this really fine system in her house, the camera system, surveillance system, and it really caught what these criminals did. They got in through the doggy door. And they were just casually walking around the house, casing a joint late at night. And there were two dogs in there and a cat. And the dogs just treated them like guests of honor. And if it wasn't so sad and you know, it's such a terrible thing, it's funny to watch that these dogs running in and out and around them. And these guys weren't worried about those dogs, and those dogs weren't worried about those guys. And this woman had her house broken into before, and she put this surveillance system in there, and there you go. She caught these guys just coming right into their house. It's a crazy world we live in, isn't it? And all the things we value on this earth are vulnerable to loss. Age is going to get them, or rust, or vermin, whether those vermin come in the form of insect like moths, Jesus talked about, or humans like robbers and burglars. But think about this. If you give your heart to these treasures, that's just foolish. That's utter foolishness. It's building your life on the sand. It's just going to wash away. There's nothing there really to affix that to. Anybody here ever see the movie, actually the series, I guess it's a trilogy, about the Pirates of the Caribbean? Yeah, a lot of people have seen that. I don't know which one. I think it might have been in the second one, where Davy Jones, the captain of the Flying Dutchman, the ruler of the seven seas, as it were, he wanted to be immortal. And what he had to sacrifice to gain that mortality was his heart. And he ripped his heart out of his chest and put it in, Davy Jones's locker. He put it in a chest, and he buried that on an island somewhere. And he turned into this otherworldly creature, something that wasn't human. But that's what he loved this world and the treasure it offered him so much, he was willing to sacrifice everything for that. And he put his heart in a box. Listen to me now. God doesn't want your heart locked up in some safety deposit box or in a bank vault or in a safe in your house. Where all your stuff is, that's not where your heart's supposed to be. He wants your heart securely with Him in heaven. He's the only one who could take care of it. There is no safe on earth, you know. We have safes, but they're not really safe. They're vulnerable. The only safe place to store your treasures are in heaven. Because where your treasures are going to be, that's where your heart's going to be. What is your greatest possession? You think about it. I want you to think about it from God's standpoint. What's your greatest possession is your soul, or your spirit, however you want to look at that. That part of you that is eternal. It's the only thing that's crossing over to the other side with you. Now, how do you feel about your soul? How do you think about it? Do you think about it? Do you give that a lot of consideration? Because it's the most important thing that you have in your possession. Do you protect it? Because I'm going to tell you, God has given us a soul security system right here. Right here in these pages. It's been purchased and distributed by His Son. And all the instructions are right here. We just got to open those things up and read them. Jesus' words, that it's building on the rock. It's a firm foundation. And we need to treasure these words, and we need to treasure our souls above all else that's in this world. Do you treasure your soul more than you do your money or your things? I mean, because I think we're going to say yes, but let's be honest with ourselves and examine ourselves. Is that really the truth? And hear me. If you don't love God more than your stuff, then you don't love your soul more than your stuff. Because Jesus said in Matthew 6:24, in the same context, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other. He's going to devote to the one and despise the other. You can't serve God and wealth. You can't do it. And herein lies the real problem with loving things and stuff and earthly treasure so much. It's not just that it's going to be taken from you. You're going to leave it behind. Someone else is going to steal it, whatever. That's bad enough. The real problem is when you love the things of this world that much, then that's taking your heart away from God. You can't serve Him and your wealth at the same time. Listen, only He can be trusted with that. If God doesn't own your heart, let me ask you, who does? Because I want you to look at the either-or scenarios here. I mean, we're talking about wise or foolish, no in between. Rock or sand, no in between. We're talking about life and death. Who owns your heart? It's God or it's the world. Who is the ruler of this world? That's Satan. So there's no middle ground here. You give it all to God. He wants your heart and He wants you to treasure the things that are eternal. The sixth step in solid rock living is don't be a worrywart. Don't be a worrywart. Matthew chapter 6, verse 25. For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life. As to what you will eat, what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and not the body more than clothing? For this reason, he says, because all these things are either going to be stolen or decayed or corrupted because you're not taking any of these things with you. Don't worry about them. Why worry about things that aren't going to be around very long? He said if you're seeking first the kingdom of God, then you're going to be all right. God has you covered. He's going to see to your needs. And if you're living that solid rock life, doesn't it just make sense that you're going to be more focused on doing things than worrying about things? Jesus said that. The wise person is the one who hears His words and does them. Not the person who hears things and then just worries about what's going to happen next. If we're living our lives the right way, firmly fixed on that rock, we're going to be too busy about doing the Lord's work, trying to do the right things, and not sitting around and wringing our hands. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7 says, cast all your cares, your anxieties upon Him, upon God, because He cares for you. I think that's really very interesting. Jesus tells us not to worry, and it's foolish to worry, because you're not taking anything with you, and because you're living your life to serve God anyway, not your earthly treasure. So why worry about it? And Peter tells us to cast all our worries on God. Now, this goes right along with storing your treasures up in heaven. God just doesn't want your treasures to be up in heaven. He wants you to throw your worries up there too. You can't handle them. He wants to take them from you. And you know, He's got a worry-crushing machine up there. He'll take care of that. He's got an anxiety processor up there, a disposal system for that. You don't have to worry about that anymore. He wants it all. He wants your heart. He wants your soul. He wants your mind. He wants your strength. He wants your time, your life, your love. But He wants your worries and your concerns too. He wants you to store all of those things up there, because He can handle them all. Worrying all the time is just unwise. It's not just like building on sand. It's like being in quicksand. Have you ever felt like you've been up to your neck in worries and you just can't budge, you can't move, you can't breathe? They're suffocating. That's not where God wants you to be. He wants you to cast those things on Him. That's not to say He's going to take all your problems away from you, but He'll help you deal with them better. You might have the problems here, but He's going to take the worries from you. And you're going to be able to function on this world. You're going to be able to do, you're going to be able to act like a wise person. That's the easiest thing in the world to say, isn't it? Don't worry, right? You're the doctor. Just relax. Yeah, right. That's easy for you to say. Yeah, when he's sitting there poking something in your eye, and he's telling you just to relax. Sure, doc, let's switch seats. Or he's wheeling in this big contraption. It looks something like it come off the sci-fi channel. Now, just relax. It's not easy to do. But why should you not worry? Well, Jesus tells you, God is going to take care of you. He's bigger than all of your worries. He's going to clothe you. He's going to feed you. He's going to see to your needs. And if you're seeking first His kingdom, everything's going to be all right. He's going to take care of all that other. The kingdom stuff's the most important stuff anyway. And the worldly stuff, He's going to make sure that you're going to be all right. Well, the seventh step in solid rock living is treat all the people in the world, in your world, the same way that you want to be treated. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you. For this is the law and the prophets. I ask you something. How many of our problems and this world's problems would just be eliminated if people just lived by this one simple golden rule? Think about it. If people lived by this rule, we wouldn't have to worry about protecting our homes and our things, would we? Nobody'd break in. If people lived by this rule, we wouldn't have to worry about hatred and revenge and lust, because people would just treat each other right. If you're treating people the way you want them to treat you, well, how do you want people to treat you? You want them to treat you good. But listen, it doesn't matter what other people do, because the only person you can really control in this life is you. You're the only one you really have any amount of control over. Even if people aren't treating you well, you can only control you. So it all starts with you. Everything does in this solid rock living. All of these things are aimed at you personally. You treat people the way you want them to treat you, no matter how they're treating you. And that's their best chance for them to make a difference in their own life is for you to do that. I want you to look what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 5. He says, "Do not judge so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite! First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. I just want to say one thing before we go into really what the focus of this is in this lesson. A lot of people say that, and they'll quote verse 1, judge not so that you will not be judged, and they'll stop there. This is not saying don't use judgment or don't judge things or people. This is saying don't be a hypocrite. You need to point out to someone when they're not living their lives right, when they're not building their life on the solid rock. You're doing them a favor. But look, you've got to get your own self straightened out first. How are people going to be able to listen to you tell them how to live if you're not living your own life right? But this is the really the biggest obstacle that keeps us from treating others the way that we want people to treat them. It's us. It's hypocrisy. Who in here is a hypocrite? Yeah, you're right. Everybody at one time or another. That's not to say we're all practicing hypocrites, but we do that sometimes. When we think about the way people treat us, what's that focusing on? Me, 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 and how they're not treating me well. I can't believe that person said that about me. I can't believe she did that. Can you believe, of all the nerve, that person to do a thing like that? And really, what we're not taking the time to stop and think of is our own faults, our own shortcomings. It's so easy to see the faults and the sinfulness and the shortcomings of other people, but it's so hard to look in that mirror and say, wait a minute, this guy right here's got problems that I need to straighten out. And the next time someone's mistreating you, and you, instead of just being mortified and blown away and just completely at your wit's end, stop and think, maybe I have done something to cause this person to treat me this way. Maybe I need to check myself. And then maybe that's the root of the problem here. And that's just going to eliminate a lot of problems. Stop and consider, maybe it's you. Maybe you're walking around with a big tube before in your eye. I've looked for graphics for this type of lesson before, and that's one of my favorite ones. It's this construction worker walking around with a big plank, a big 2x4 sticking out of his eye. And in my mind's eye, I can see this guy standing there trying to get a little splinter out of somebody else's eye, and he's whacking that guy in the head with that 2x4 trying to get that splinter out of his eye. And it's kind of ridiculous, but we do. Who do we have control of? Us. So we need to get our own house in order. Now maybe you're receiving more grief than you gave. It doesn't matter. If it started with you, then it's going to be fixed by you. And maybe you're completely innocent. It still doesn't matter. Jesus says you still need to treat other people well, no matter what. And if you're thinking about getting even, if you're thinking about revenge, you're thinking about tit for tat, that's just foolishness. That's building your house on the sand. All of these scriptures are talking about what you need to do personally. You need to take the responsibility to adopt these things in your own life to make situations better. You do the right things no matter what. No matter what anybody else is doing, you build your rock, your house on the rock. You build your life on Jesus. You treat people the way Jesus treated other people. And the final step, the eighth step in solid rock living, is enter through the narrow gate. Matthew 7, verses 13 to 14. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life. And there are few who find it. Let me tell you something about the solid rock path. It is a path less traveled. It just is. The solid rock life is a life rarely lived. Few are going to find this path. Few are really going to build their lives on the rock. Listen, lusting, lying, hoarding, worrying, mistreating other people, that's what everybody else in the world does. Anybody can do those things. Right? Jesus calls us to a less than ordinary life, maybe a more than ordinary life, an extraordinary life. Not just like everybody else. Shining lights. That's where the ground is safe and solid and secure, is on that rock, on Jesus, imitating Him, living our life as best we can, as close as we can to the example that He left us. But more than that being the narrow way, the small gate, it represents your entire life's approach to God in any venue, not just in the issues of morality, but just in any area of your life. You need to be trying to pursue God and His will no matter what. Matthew chapter 7, I really think Jesus points this out, verses 21 through 23. When He talks about this, once again, this is right before He does the parable of the two builders. This is drawing the Sermon on the Mount to a close, and He really drives this point home. He says, "Not everyone who says to Me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of My Father," not just saying, but doing, "who is in heaven. Many will say to Me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in Your name? In Your name cast out demons, in Your name perform many miracles.' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from Me, you who practice lawlessness.'" We're talking about religious folks here. Folks who did some good things. Folks who had some power. It's not just, God just doesn't judge that. He just doesn't govern in matters of morality in your life. It's not just doing good things, being good people, that means you're building your life on the solid rock, that you're entering in on the narrow gate, on that narrow road. It's our whole life's approach to God has to be very narrow, or just according to His pattern, His way, the path that He's laid down. When it comes to worship, you worship Him His way. You don't choose your own way to worship Him. Without innovation, without human innovation, His way. Wearing His name only. There are a lot of people in this world who think they're building their life on a solid rock, and they wear strange names you don't read about in the Bible. You belong to Christ, or do you belong to some denomination? Whose name do you wear? That's a narrow way. That's a small name. It's one name. It's Christ. It's His. And being a part of His church that He died for, that's a very narrow way there. And entering in to His kingdom, His church, His way, through the waters of baptism, believing and repenting and confessing and being baptized. That's His way. That's a very narrow way. There's not a whole room, lot of room for negotiating there. There's none. That's a narrow gate. Galatians 3:27 says that all who have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. How do you get into Christ? You're baptized into Him. A lot of people think they're building their house on the firm foundation, and they're not. They're building on the sand. They're doing some good moral things, right? But they're not doing everything God's way. We need to focus on going in that narrow gate. Folks, that's the only way in. We need to make sure we've got it right. We need to make sure we're walking that path and that we've entered in through that gate. Well, I appreciate your kind attention tonight. Go ahead and pick up your song books. We're going to sing number 336 in just a moment for your encouragement. Building your house on the rock or building your house on the sand? What an awesome illustration that is for folks in Jesus' day to clearly understand, folks like you and me to understand as well. We can see how foolish it is to build your house on the sand. We talked about Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't know if anybody ever heard of Port Royal? In Jamaica, in the Caribbean. A lot of the movie, The Pirates of the Caribbean, was shot on that location. And it was literally an entire city built on sand. It was once known as the wickedest city on earth. And it was one of the largest towns in the English colonies. And historians, what they call it now is the city that sank. And it was founded in the 1500s. And it was the center of shipping commerce at that time. And it was the home of privateers and pirates, guns for hire, and then folks who were just out there plundering other people's goods on the high seas. It was literally built on the sand. And early in the morning on June 7th in 1692, an earthquake hit Jamaica. And houses and buildings literally slid into the sea. And that most of that city is underwater today. Now, that quake, that earthquake caused the sand to liquefy and empty right into Kingston Harbor, right there in Jamaica. And there have been efforts to rebuild that at other times in the past. But hurricanes and floods have wiped out any hope of that as well. There's some kind of restoration project going on right now as well. But we can see here a living illustration of trying to build your house on the sand. You see what can happen. Folks, storms are coming. You hear me? It's not a question of if, it's when. And the storms that Jesus is talking about here, when he talks about the physical storms, the actual storms that you see with the rain, the winds, he is making a spiritual application. They're the troubles and the hardships and the temptations that you're going to have in this life. And the sickness and the illness and what have you, the tragedies, they're coming. Who are you building your life on? You building your life on Jesus, the rock? You building your life on this earth because it's just going to be burned up one day. And you're not going to be around very long anyway. Who are you building your house on? If it's not on Jesus, it's time to make the change. It's time to tear that old house down and start from scratch, because it's hard to move a good foundation under a poorly built home. It's time to give your life to Christ, do things His way completely, totally. And we want to help you do that this evening. If you haven't given your life to Him, if you haven't buried the old man of sin in baptism and raised up a new creature walking on that narrow path, building on that solid rock, we want to do that for you. See, we want to baptize you into Christ. If you've taken that step, but you've wandered back out on the sand, come back. Come back to solid ground. Repent of your sins. You don't even need to tell us about it. Just do it and turn back. But if you need our help, if you need us to pray with you, pray for you, help in some way, help restore you back to that solid ground, we want to do it. That's why we're here. So if there's something we can help you with, while we're standing and singing right now, you walk right up front here and you tell me what you need, and we'll see to it that your needs are met.
Very well.